from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, the pros and cons of working from home. More of us are able to do it, which also means more opportunities for conference calls, meetings, and interviews to go terribly wrong, just as it did for one dad being interviewed by the BBC. You've no doubt seen or heard by now about the viral video of a political science professor trying to keep his composure as his two young children invade his live television interview with the BBC. Many have commented on how they could relate to his experience. So we want to hear from you. Tell us your BBC dad moment. Next on Forum after this news. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, you're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. This is what happened when political science professor Robert Kelly sat down at his home office for a live BBC interview on Skype about the removal of the South Korean president.
Scandals happen all the time. The question is, how do democracies respond to those scandals?
And what will it mean for the wider region? I think one of your children has just walked in. I mean, shifting sands in the region, do you think relations with the North?
A shifting situation indeed. Soon after Kelly's daughter swaggered into his home office, a little baby rolled in on a walker, followed by Kelly's mortified wife, who burst into the room to pull the kids out with Kelly, all the while trying to keep his composure. If you have not seen this video, I highly recommend you do. For many of the roughly 25% of Americans who work from home, the video captured the perils of conducting business in our personal spaces. And we want to hear from you. What's been your experience as a remote employee or someone self-employed? Have you ever had a BBC dad moment? Doesn't have to involve kids. Pets have also made their fair share of debuts in video conferences. And what are your questions about how to work from home more effectively, as some employers consider reining in the benefit? You can call us with your questions and stories at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. Or if you prefer, you could email your questions or comments to forum at kqed.org, post them on our website, kqed.org/forum, or on Facebook or Twitter. We're at KQED Forum. Let me tell you who is joining us for the hour. Jody Brett Kelly is an Oakland-based journalist and blogger. She blogs at aboutlastweekend.com and has worked at home for 14 years while raising four kids. Good morning, Jody Brett.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me. It's such a relief to get out of the house.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
And speak to a human.
We're glad we could do that for you. Also joining us is Nancy Rothbard. She's professor and chair of the management department at Wharton School. And she is also working from home today. Correct, Nancy Rothbard?
Yes, I am. Thanks, Mina.
Well, thanks for being here. Jody Brett Kelly, I'll start with you. Why do you think this video connected with so many people, besides the sheer comic relief?
Well, I think, as you say, there's so many people who work from home, and we all thought, there for the grace of God go I. You know, it was like, and I think also the contrast between the really adorable kids and his very calm, serious demeanor. I think there was a real irony. You know, if this has happened to me so many times, but of course, I'm like totally panicked. And then the kids are like interviewing for The Exorcist. So it's not quite as adorable a situation as what we saw there.
You say this has happened to you any number of times. Do you have any advice on how to deal with this kind of life interruption that comes into a work-related situation?
You know, I really think you've got to ring off and say that you'll call back. And we would love to think that, you know, somehow we could gather the children on our lap and we could all, you know, just get along and they would be gurgling away. But as I say, any time I've tried to involve the children in a call or try and hold them off or anything like that, it's just like a Lord of the Flies sort of situation, with lots of screaming and head turning and, you know, lots of cornflakes involved.
Yes. Nancy Rothbard, I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on this in terms of how to deal with these unexpected interruptions, like, say, a cat jumps on your lap or in the middle of some important video conference that you're having, or a kid pounds on the door.
I think that these are really very common experiences for people who work from home. And one of the things that's really challenging about it is that the person that you're interacting with might have very different expectations of what's appropriate behavior. And, you know, I think Jody is right on by saying, you need to do what's comfortable for yourself also, where you can be in a space that where you can concentrate and give your best to the interaction. And that may differ for different people, right? For some people, they really need to shut it down immediately and because they can't focus. And also they're concerned with how the other person's going to react. However, if you're interacting with somebody who you know well or who you have a different kind of a relationship with, your response may vary. And so I think it's really important to both consider what makes you comfortable, but also what is going to make the other person you're interacting with the most comfortable.
I read a piece on Life Hackers by Kristen Wong where she offers up a few things that I'll share with you. One is she said, make sure to recognize the derailment. Otherwise, it's weird if you're just trying to pretend it's not happening in the moment.
And I think that was what was so funny about the video, that he almost was trying to ignore that it was happening. And I think afterwards he actually said he was hoping that his daughter, you know, in her yellow sweater, who was like a, you know, signpost, would go and play with her toys. And we all know that's not going to happen.
And another that Wong wrote was not to incessantly apologize, that really your reaction can contain the situation. Do you agree, Nancy Rothbart?
I mean, I think that the reaction to be able to contain the situation is really very natural. You know, you just want to box it up and hope it goes away. And I think that's probably something that people who are less experienced with this probably hope for. The more experience you have, as Jody said, the more you know it's very hard to just make it go away just by hoping it will. And so, you know, being really proactive about that is really critical.
Well, Robert Kelly was interviewed after this incident, and this is what he said during a press conference he gave, I believe, at Pusan University, where he works.
We thought it was a disaster. And I had assumed that this would end any television appearances, that people would see this and assume that, you know, it was just wildly unprofessional, no one would ever call me again, that, you know, I'd never speak on television again.
Wildly unprofessional is the positive reaction he got after this, a sign that more and more people understand this is just the times we live in, Jody Brett Kelly?
It is. I think it definitely is, because it is, as I said before, there for the grace of God go I. But I also think the positive reaction was the fact that he was a man. And I think if it was a woman, there'd be total double standards.
Really?
And yeah, I think, you know, people would be saying, oh, she's all over the show. It wasn't terribly professional. And I just sort of think of all the reactions a woman could give. And I think every one of them, people would criticize.
It's interesting. There were social, cultural conversations that really emerged from this. Nancy Rothbard, do you agree? Do you think that we would have found the situation as endearing had it been a woman, given the fact that we've attached child-rearing responsibilities more to women than to men as a society?
I mean, I think that there are a lot of stereotypes that we have about women and expectations we have about women in terms of child-rearing, et cetera, and the difficulty that women are going to have in combining work and family. And so I do think that that's certainly possible. I also think there's another factor here that was associated with why he was not viewed unprofessionally, which is status. He has very high status as somebody who's an expert, who's being consulted for his knowledge and his deep expertise on a particular subject. And so the status that he holds really trumps the other kind of factors in terms of the unprofessional attribution that people could make.
That's interesting. Since you work with managers, from a manager's perspective, if this was happening during a meeting that you were having with your employee, how would managers, you think, respond to it? Do you think they would, especially if the employee has a certain status, right, at the organization, do you think that they would see this as, you know, reality? This is life these days, right? Our work and home life spaces intertwine much more. Or do you think it could potentially leave, put a pause in their minds in terms of whether or not this person is totally focused?
So I think that there's really two ways to think about it here. So one is, if it's an employee who has a really good track record, who I know delivers all the time for me, and this happens, I'm gonna let it go, and I'm gonna say, oh, how cute, right? You know, because I know that this person consistently delivers for me. But if it's somebody who I have a question in my mind about, then it could reinforce some of those negative thoughts. Likewise, if this were the boss and the boss's kid, you know, came in, you know, in the middle of the conference call, then people might have a very different reaction as well. It might, you know, it might not be seen as much of a problem.
Again, Nancy Rothbard is professor and chair of the management department at Wharton School. And Jody Brett Kelly is an Oakland-based journalist and blogger who blogs at aboutlastweekend.com and has worked for 14 years from home while raising four kids. We asked our listeners what working from home was like for them. And Paul tweets, working from home is wonderful. No commute. I get to see my toddler during the day. But it does have downsides, social and my waistline. For me, it's good for now. The social thing comes up a lot, Jody Brett Kelly, in terms of one of the downsides of working from home.
Definitely. You're totally working in a vacuum. And as I said to Irene, your producer, I mean, she was the first person I spoke to today. And I think you're working in a vacuum, and I feel terrible in the morning because the only people I really talk to besides my husband are at the coffee shop. And so I'm madly walking around with these Ramona eyes looking for somebody I know. And the poor barista, you know, I'm like, hi, 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 it's me. You know, I really like your shirt. Were you wearing that on Tuesday? What about Thursday? You had that sparkly one on. And it's like, be quiet, Jody, be quiet, you know. But you do really glom on to people, and you become... you dress like a slob because you can dress like Nick Nolte and it's fine, you know, and you become one of his disciples, basically. But yeah, it is very, very isolating.
What have you found in terms of things that have worked, besides going to the coffee shop to be able to get your social fix in the morning, to be able to reduce this sense of isolation?
Well, I think the coffee shop thing, and I worked from a coffee shop for a while, and it was... irony again, I left my home after the cleaners had cleaned it and went to this really filthy coffee shop in Oakland that turned into a beer garden at night. And they cleaned the toilet literally once a day at 11 o'clock. So after a while, you couldn't use the toilet. So, you know, after a while, I got a little bit tired of that. But, you know, Thursdays I'll meet friends for a walk. Or I'll just call friends. You can get into a really bad habit of being on Facebook a lot. And, you know, then of course, Jennifer Aniston becomes your friend and you know everything about her, including that she has her morning coffee with the chickens. And, you know, there's way too much. I know way too much about Jennifer Aniston.
Well, Jenny tweets, working from home is extremely lonely and makes me procrastinate. So I work from a co-working space instead. The community atmosphere is key. Co-working spaces, what are those?
Well, I actually joined one. It was fantastic. It was called The Port in Oakland. And it was great because they had lounge chairs. They had all sorts of different configurations of how you could work, even a silent space. And you get together with people. It's all sorts of different people. You sit at it. You pay like up $50 to $100 a month, and they're beautiful spaces, many of them. But eventually, actually, I came home from that as well. I just sort of thought, well, I've got a perfectly nice home to sit in. And also, I found myself listening into other people's conversations all the time.
Well, John tweets, working from home is not social enough for me. And Noelle writes, don't tell my boss, but working at home means I can comment on forums website. Nancy Rothbard, generally, what I've heard is that managers have been able to get more work, that their workers who work from home are generally more productive than those who work in the office.
I mean, I think that this is a new phenomenon that we're really being able to take advantage of because of technology, right? It's enabling us to be connected either through Skype or through email or other kinds of intranet kinds of connections. And so a lot of organizations are finding it's actually cheaper as well to have people working from home because they don't have to have as large office, physical space. And so this is something that has started to grow in popularity amongst many, many different types of organizations. It also offers you know, people, you know, flexibility and different options in terms of how they can be productive. But I think that one of the key things that Jody was pointing to earlier that I would really want to emphasize is it's very important to have a routine and a structure to how you work from home so that you can get the most out of your time. You don't want to just sort of necessarily. I mean, some people might sit around in their PJs all day, but, you know, I think it's also really important to kind of have set working hours and have the ability to really make sure that you're on task, because I do think that the time can get away from you. On the other hand, there's a lot of work from home situations where people are actually fairly heavily monitored by their employees electronically. So they know when you're on the system and what you're doing, depending on what the job is.
And, well, let's hear, we've got some calls coming in, so let me get a couple of them in here. Michael in San Rafael. Hi, Michael.
Hi. I should preface this by saying this must have touched a nerve, because this is probably the second time in several decades of listening to NPR that I've taken the time to call in. but I think I want to mention marital dynamics in this context. We have an 8-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 5-year-old, two of which have some extra special needs. And I'm in the process of launching a highly scalable under a global brand company, and we have 4 small businesses. So there's a lot going on. And what I have found over several years of trying to spend time working at home is there's the expectations sort of shift. My wife is probably not listening. I hope she's not. But there's sort of a, well, okay, it's 1:25. I got to pick up the first one. I'm going to pick up the second one at 2:30. Can you watch them so I don't have to take one to school to pick up the others? And the frequent doctor's visits, well, you know, I need you to watch. So there's a shifting of expectations and roles. And then you hit, well, it's 5:30 or 6. Are you taking off from work yet? It's the end of the day. Well, wait a minute. I've been interrupted 2 or 3 times for 15 minutes each. So just want to share that whoever else is experiencing that, it's not alone. And my solution has been to just get a small independent office about 10 minutes away.
That is a very good point, though, Jody Brett Kelly, in terms of the success of making this work. And it depends a lot also on reconfiguring your relationships in your household to be able to manage the expectations around a work from home life.
Exactly. Yeah. At one stage, we had 4 kids under 6. So there was a lot of that sort of switching off and point scoring sometimes, but you know, you would call it. But yeah, it is really difficult. And you can't think that you don't need childcare as well, because you need exactly the same amount of childcare as somebody who works outside the home. And thinking that you can save on that, that really doesn't work.
You must have a lot of funny stories if you had 4 kids really, under 6.
Some really bad ones. In fact, even last week with teenagers, I still had to bribe them to stay quiet in the TV room with Coco Pops and an episode of Kardashians. And I think there was something else. There was a trifecta of badness that I had to bribe them with to just stay very quiet. But yeah, we've had some little episodes. My husband at one stage, he was trying to get money for his startup. He was calling Switzerland. And he had to lock himself in a closet within the office to, you know, shut down all the shouting that was going on outside.
Wow. He's trying to get money.
Yeah, exactly. Calling Switzerland.
Well, thanks, Michael, for the call. And let's hear from Peter in San Francisco. Hi, Peter.
Hi there. So, yeah, I have a comment. I've worked from home for several years now. But it really depends upon the situation. My wife and I both, in fact, work from home. We don't have children. We don't have animals. So we don't get that kind of interruption. And we've turned one of our rooms into a dedicated double office. But also, it depends on the type of work. A few years ago, I was working for a market research company that has a very nice office just off Union Square in San Francisco. But none of the people that I worked with were in that office. They were scattered around the world. I was doing a lot of phone-type work. So there was little point in me spending 2 hours trundling backwards and forwards on Muni just to go to the office. And yet, I was also doing a lot of traveling. So the social side was very easily covered because of the interactions that I had. So I might have worked from home, but I also did 75,000 air miles in the same year. So I do think there are issues, you know, if people feel trapped at home. But if the style of work gets you out and about and traveling, it's sometimes far better than going into an office.
Well, Peter, thanks for those suggestions. Rhonda writes, I put my toddler down for a nap, started the laundry, and went into my small home office to make a very important business call. While I was talking, the laundry started getting loud, so I shut the door. After about 45 minutes, I got off the phone and realized there was a roaring sound. Then I opened my door and stepped into 4 inches of water and a geyser spewing from a burst pipe over the washing machine. I don't remember who the client was, but I remember falling into the water and getting the baby dripping wet. Wow, there was a lot going on.
Wow. You deserve a medal.
Pam writes, as someone who's been there with my kids, when I work with someone whose kids interrupt, I always tell them it's fine to take a few minutes to deal with the kids. I would encourage everybody to do this in the interests of a more humane society that takes the needs of families into account. Nancy Rothbard, are there things that managers can do to make this a little less stressful on, say, an employee with young kids and, you know, who are very, they can be very unpredictable.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that one of the key things that is coming out of this is that there's a lot of different ways that people might approach this situation. And, you know, managers make a huge difference. The research shows that the attitude your manager has towards the work at home type of situation will really make or break that in terms of whether you can be successful in it or not. Not just from a productivity perspective, but also, you know, does this impede your career progress or not? And, you know, that manager attitude is critical. And so for managers who want to really promote people being able to do this, firstly, recognizing that there's different ways to follow and to reward people. So understanding that perhaps not thinking so much about face time or clock time, but more about results orientation. So if this person gets results, do you really care if they're tied to their desk? And, you know, that kind of a thing really will make a difference. And so trying to change the way that you evaluate people is really important as you move into this type of a situation.
I found it interesting that on one Forbes list of tips for working from home, this author wrote, except that your rise to the top might be thwarted, because she was saying that working from home can lead to invisibility. Can you talk about that very quickly? Sorry, we have about 30 seconds before the break.
Yes, I mean, I think that part of the issue is that you're not there, and so sometimes you're overlooked. And that can be a real challenge for people who are working from home and are not in, you know, the constant water cooler conversations.
Well, we're talking with Nancy Rothbard, professor and chair of the management department at Wharton School, and Jody Brett Kelly, a journalist and blogger who works from home. We're talking about the joys and challenges of working from home, especially since a viral video of a professor whose kids interrupted his important BBC interview. You can join the conversation by calling 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. More after the break. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking about the joys and challenges of working from home. A now infamous viral video of Professor Robert Kelly's serious live BBC TV interview getting hijacked by his adorable children has sparked a lot of comments about the challenges and benefits of doing this, which many of us do here in the Bay Area, because it's expensive to live here. It's expensive to have office space. People have longer commutes, so they're finding that working from home can give them some sanity and flexibility that they may not have. And we're asking you for your questions about working from home, comments and stories about whether you've had a BBC moment. And Chris writes, one very warm fall day, I was at my home office desk on a Skype video call with my boss. At one point, my boss exclaimed, "Well, hello there, Ralph," and started laughing hysterically. I turned around and behold, there was my shirtless husband, whom my boss could see only from the waist up. He had thoughtfully brought me a bowl of chilled fruit, but I could tell from the look on my boss's face that she had conjured images of a different afternoon delight. We all laughed so hard we could not breathe. Video conferencing. Jody Brett Kelly. So many opportunities.
So many opportunities. Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, a friend of a friend told me that she had a number of calls to make from home during the day, so she thought she'd squeeze in a quick shower in the morning. Came out of her shower, hopped on her call. Her boss and another male colleague were on it, and she had herself, as usual, in mute before the others were to join her. She grabbed her laptop and carried it into the closet with her, where she was going to look for some clothes, and put the laptop on her laundry hamper. And her boss said something that piqued her interest, and she wanted to reply to him. So she went to unmute herself. But what she hadn't realized is she'd actually turned on video, at which point her husband said, "Annie, are you buck naked?" And she was on video.
That is very unfortunate. There actually was also another naked or nude frame capture in a story that was submitted to the New York Times. This seems to happen quite a lot. And let's hear from Dave in Los Gatos. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Great.
Good, good. Yeah, you know, when I heard this, I said, wow, this has been me for the past 5 years. I have a 6-year-old and 11-year-old. And I have two startups I'm managing. I have a private equity company. Long story short, every time I get on the phone, my daughter starts to scream. It starts to fight. And then the whole underwear thing, you know, because I'm trying to get out of there. And then, you know, my 6-year-old was like, "Daddy, why are you on the phone talking in your underwear?" You know, and the guy's just, oh, my God. He goes, "Dave, get back to me when you're not busy." You know, but...
Dave, but thanks for sharing that. It's like kids have the sixth sense that you're distracted and they want to do everything they can to get your attention.
They totally
again.
Do. And I think dogs, my friend just said her dogs are exactly the same. They just start barking, barking as soon as she's on the video conferencing.
Well, Dave, thanks for sharing that story. Another listener writes, "I'm a registered nurse and work from home, taking after-hours calls from a hospice agency. Often these calls are intense, and having two young children frequently makes it challenging to find a quiet place to take them. I found myself in the closet while little ones are tapping on the door trying to find me," not unlike your husband, Jody Brett Kelly. She writes, "I wouldn't have it any other way, though. My kids keep me grounded in the work I do." It's true in some ways. They can be really a relief in terms of forcing some work-life balance. But these things all bring up one concern that I have heard from managers, Nancy Rothbard, is that that working at home does present a lot of distractions. Marissa Meyer, she made news when one of her first action steps as CEO was to remove the telecommuting option. Do you think that was the right move in her case, Nancy Rothbard?
So I think that this is a real challenge, right? That we face when we have a lot of people who are working from home. They have potentially, you know, other people in the household, whether it be kids or spouses or perhaps, you know, pets that are taking up their attention. And so it's really an assumption that I think a lot of managers have that it's going to be really difficult to concentrate and to focus. One of the things that, you know, it's interesting because you mentioned I am actually working from home today. I don't normally work from home. But the reason I actually worked from home today was because we recently had a snowstorm here on the East Coast in Philadelphia,
right,
and in, you know, the whole East Coast, and the streets are still really blocked up and icy, and I found the last couple of days my commute has gotten really long. It's much longer than normal. And so I decided, you know, I was going to lose too much time today in commuting, and I didn't have any meetings, so I was going to be able to work from home. And what I found is actually, ironically, I'm able to really concentrate here because at work, I've got lots of people knocking on my door saying, "Do you have a minute? Do you have a minute?" And so sometimes when I have really deep concentrating work, I actually have to work from home in order to get the space, ironically, from, you know, from everybody who's at the office. And so depending on what your job is, it actually can be less distracting to work at home than, and depending on what your situation at home is like, right? So it may really depend, but there's a lot of assumptions that it's going to be more distracting.
Yes. My understanding is that one of the justifications for reining in the work from home benefit is when an organization wants to really make a fundamental culture change, and that's much harder to do if you don't have employees in a building, essentially, or nearby physically.
Absolutely. So it can be really difficult when you have people scattered all throughout many locations, or who are not co-located in one place. And back to the Yahoo example that you had asked about earlier, I think that was a really controversial decision that she made. And it was controversial partly because of the fact that it was so counter-normative to the culture that had existed up until that time. And so, and what it signaled was a lack of trust in what people were doing. And when you kind of try to pull back something and it signals lack of trust, then that's very, very difficult, I think, for people to get on board with.
And let's hear now from Corinne in L.A. Hi, Corinne.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great. What's on your mind?
Sure. I was just calling in with my own work from home disaster story. I was living in London at the time, working as the UK correspondent for a US news site, and was working on a story about a violent sectarian attack in Northern Ireland. Someone called me back right after I'd come home from picking my then 2-year-old daughter up at preschool. Just as the call started, she proceeded to stand in the living room and remove a very dirty diaper. And so as I swept in to try to clean her up with the phone still clutched at my ear, she looked at the phone and said, "Is that my daddy?" And then she grabbed the phone and told the man I was interviewing, "Daddy, I did a poo."
Direct.
What did you do, Corinne? What did you do?
Fortunately, I took the phone back. I said, "Apologies. I've got, it's after the end of the preschool day." And he said, "I completely understand." You can always tell when you're talking to another parent on the phone. And he was very, very understanding. We just simply moved on with the call.
And well, I think your daughter was doing a bit of on-the-spot reporting herself.
Absolutely. I like to believe that she has journalists in.
Yes. Well, she takes after her mom. Well, Corinne, thanks for sharing that story.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Donna writes, "I work from home, and when I am on a call and it's time for the mail to arrive, I warn the other participants that I have a noisy and thoughtless coworker. That way, when the dog goes ballistic, when the mail carrier hits the porch, everyone has a good laugh. I believe that's called setting expectations." Laura writes, "I haven't heard anyone mention that a lot of people work from home because their companies don't provide offices anymore, as well as all of the expenses that now fall upon the employee." Nancy Rothbard, I think it might have been you who mentioned this, or maybe it was Jody Brett Kelly, but that, yes, this is also happening more frequently because managers are finding it's cost effective.
Absolutely. Organizations are sometimes trying to save on the electricity bill or the physical plant. If they can have people work at home, then they don't have to provide as much office space. And so depending on the types of jobs that people are doing, this has become a more common trend for many organizations. Some of them approach it with a more regimented way, right, where they will provide people with a computer, or they'll provide them with a laptop or something like that. And others might expect that they use their home equipment.
Well, let's hear now from John in Oakland. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi.
I've been working at home for 25 years.
Wow.
I would not have been able to do this if I hadn't gone to an office for the first 10 or 12 years of my career to make contacts and learn the business and et cetera. But the concern I have is my children. What kind of example am I setting for my children? You know, I think even if they ultimately want to work from home in their careers, I think it's really important to have some years of experience of going into an office and working with other people and learning the business and making the contacts and et cetera. And at this point, my example is really pretty lax. I mean, I work in my pajamas, and the number of days where I'm like, "Oh my God, it's almost 3:00. I better get dressed. The kids are going to be home from school." You know, I guess I don't know how that's going to play out. The kids are in high school now, and we'll see over the next few years how this is going to play out. And the example I'm setting for them.
That's a very interesting point, Jody Brett Kelly, in terms of John's concerns about needing to have the experience of being in a workplace environment and whether or not he's setting a bad example.
Yeah, John, that's a point I've never heard before, actually. I think it's a great example you're setting because you're seeing the kids from 3 o'clock onwards. You're there, you're involved, and it's just another way of working. But I know what you mean, because sometimes I'm sitting there in my stained track pants gnawing on a chop, and I think maybe this isn't the best example for a style writer.
Well, John, thanks for the point. Heidi writes, I fear that one of your guests will give employers the wrong impression. Not everyone is on Facebook or has trouble focusing while working at home. I'm more productive and less stressed when I don't have to sit in traffic for 2 hours every day. Actually, Nancy Rothbard, I think you made the point of just how much easier it is right now to be at home while you're working and how much more productive and less distracted you are. And actually, to that point, Roy writes, I telecommuted for many years, and those were amongst my most productive times. Apart from the advantages to the individual, there are a multitude of advantages for society, such as reduced global warming pollutants and reduced congestion on roadways. It's time corporations embrace telecommuting, and this movement should be led by the tech companies. Instead, they seem to be among the most resistant. Interesting. Nancy Rothbard, is there a movement, because these tech companies tend to be sort of innovation centers, and that there is some pulling back that you're seeing from corporations now on the work from home benefit?
I mean, I think that there are a lot of companies that are very flexible around that, but there is a culture at many of these tech companies where they want people to be together, right? And they want them to interact with one another from, as you say, a creativity and innovation standpoint, right? So, but I think that they are also, because they're very technologically, they're hiring people who are more technologically savvy. They also find ways to interact, you know, using Skype or using other kinds of technologies that enable them to interact in a simulated face-to-face way as well. And so I think it really will vary depending on the company and depending on the needs of some of the employees. As a result, I actually want to get back to a point that John made also, which I think is a really important one. I just want to emphasize that a lot of the people who are most successful within organizational settings working from home are those who have had some time in the office where they've made some connections with the other people around them. And so they have the relationships, they're known, and they're trusted. And that's one of the reasons that they can leverage that and be effective in the work from home kind of a situation, at least within an organizational setting.
Well, let's hear now from Jacob in Palo Alto. Hi, Jacob.
Hello, good morning. I've been begging, my boss is a little, or my company is a little bit more conventional, and I've been begging my boss to allow me to work from home a little bit more, and I finally got to today. I don't know if I'm breaking ground here, but my reasons were, of course, apart from the traffic, the Bay Area traffic, the trend right now in tech are these open space or these non-cubicle workspaces. And they just implemented that at my company, and it's so invasive. I just have such a hard time concentrating when I have a person who's 2 feet away from me in my face all day long. I just cannot concentrate in those open space cubicles or non-cubicle spaces.
Jacob,
and that's why I've been wanting to get out of the office more and more.
Thanks for that. And how were you able to convince your employer to let you work from home?
Persistence.
Well, thanks, Jacob. Nancy Rothbard, are you hearing
this?
Absolutely. And I think that that's actually a really – I love that point that Jacob is making, because that is actually a trend within a lot of offices, right, for these open plan space kind of where, you know, people kind of don't even have a desk, right? They go and they sit down on whatever available space is around, and the idea is to get people together and interact more, but it can be incredibly distracting, right? To my point earlier with people, I mean, I have a door, and people don't even respect that, right? So that's kind of hard, and that's actually something. There's a pharmaceutical company in Philly, GlaxoSmithKline. It's a British company, but it has a large facility here. And I was talking with some folks there about how
when they went to this open plan, and but then they started to allow a lot of their employees to work from home more because of exactly the point that Jacob is raising, where people found like it, that there was really, really hard to concentrate if they were in that space all the time.
Nancy, sorry, go ahead. Mina,
this just popped into my head, actually. This is what happens when you work from home. A friend yesterday, this is apropos of nothing really, but a friend yesterday said there was one really great benefit that she found from working from home, and that was that she got to have sex with her boyfriend at lunchtime. So that might be something that we've thought of, or an employer has thought of or wants to think about. But I actually had that comment from a number of people.
Well, Jody Brett Kelly is an Oakland-based journalist and blogger who blogs at aboutlastweekend.com, and she's worked from home for 14 years and has raised 4 kids. While doing that, Nancy Rothbard is professor and chair of the management department at the Wharton School, who is working from home today. Rob writes, one of my favorite work-from-home moments was when power went out in my Russian Hill neighborhood and everybody flocked to the coffee shops on Polk Street in the rain. When I saw the lines, I invited some other regulars to my home, where miraculously the power was still on. It was during the holidays, so we lit up the Christmas tree, put the fire on the flat screen, made some hot apple cider, and co-worked from my small living room for the day. Very nice, Rob. Megan writes, as the wife of a husband who works from home, I identified with the mother in the video. This must be the Robert Kelly video. I'm constantly trying to keep my kids' antics down to a dull roar while my husband handles conference calls. But I often remind him, hey, we live here. People work from home to enhance work-life balance, and the life part goes on while work is happening. Deal with it.
Well, I really feel for her because she must feel like Julie from The Love Boat, and that's an unpaid Julie.
Well, let's hear now from Dee in Fairfield. Hi, Dee.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. So I work from home as an entrepreneur, but I actually moved home to look after my dad, who's getting on in years. My mom works all the time. And so it's always a funny work day for me, but one that I actually learned a good lesson from. I used to make the bad habit of having my laptop and I would bring it into my bedroom. So I'd close my door and have it half open and, take my calls, do my emails. But, my dad's lonely and he loves me and I'm the only child. So sometimes I'd be on business calls and he would just let himself in my room and just smother me with kisses. And I couldn't just go, Dad, so I'd have to do this weird dual personality thing where I'm completely keeping my composure, but I'm like pushing him off and like wiping his kisses off my face. And other times he would just sit there and watch the TV next to me while I'm on the call. And I'm looking at him like, this is going to be like another 30 minutes or so. And so it was super funny and frustrating. And then after a while, I realized he just wants me to be around. He just wants my company. So I ended up doing a happy compromise. I took my laptop out of my room and I brought it into the downstairs living room area where the family room where he always loves to watch TV. So I do my emails from there and it seems to keep him pretty content and happy because he's like, she's here, she's emailing. I love her so much. This is great. And then when I get a phone call or have to make a business call, I physically do leave the room and it signals to him, okay, I'm not in daughter mode. I'm in work mode. And so it's always an adventure with him. But you just have to have compromise. And when I realized that that's what his antics were kind of showing to me, then I accommodated and it's working out so far. So never a dull moment.
Well, Dee, thanks for sharing that. And it reminds me of another piece of advice that I saw, which was to invest in a good headset. That can be something that helps to limit whatever distractions are around you when you're having conversations with people on calls and things like that.
Exactly. That's great. Although I can actually block anything out. My son, 13-year-old son, said yesterday to his friends, you talk, she hears, but she never says anything.
You've become an expert at
exactly
compartmentalizing your hearing. Let's hear now from Paul in San Jose. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I wanted to offer another point of view in support of what Marissa Meyer did. I worked at Yahoo a long time ago, but I've also telecommuted. And one difference I found in, at least in software work where we did creative automation, was that a lot of the creativity happens around whiteboards, around the coffee pot, and sometimes the most creative people may not be the most extroverted and assertive in a teleconference. So the company does pay a price in lost creativity when everyone telecommutes.
Well, Paul, thanks for sharing that perspective. I want to actually hear from Peter in San Francisco, who I'm being told has another manager's perspective. Peter?
Hi there. So I'll try and make this quick. I used to work for Sun Microsystems, and one of the things that they did was formally train their managers to work with distributed teams, because we had teams all the way around the world. And it's very important, if you have people who are not actually in the meeting room, to make sure that you give them equal opportunity to present their voice. And to the last comment from a respondent, that also includes if you've got people who are not extrovert, make sure you make the space for them to make their points. But there's an awful lot of training that can be formally done to make this sort of stuff work from managers if it's done well. And I've just come off a call this morning from, you know, my small group of consulting people. There are like four of us on the West Coast, a couple on the East Coast, and one in Bangkok. And we have a regular weekly meeting, and it works smoothly.
Peter, thanks for sharing that. Training programs for this, Nancy Rothbard, are there a lot of those?
I mean, I love that example that Peter just gave, because I think it really emphasizes a way to think about this, which is not just about people at home surrounded by dogs and kids, which is one of the challenges. But the other challenge is that people could be in offices all around the world, and you need the same skills to be able to bring them together and to make them work together effectively. And I think that for managers to actually use that metaphor of distributed teams and think about that in how they would bring in and manage people who are working from home is a great way to think about getting the most and leveraging the effectiveness of people who are working from home.
Well, we asked our listeners in a Twitter survey, are you a fan of working from home? And this is with 25 votes in, so take it for what it is. 72% said, yes, I love it. And 28% said, no, I hate it. You can vote by going to our Twitter feed. We're at KQED Forum. Rachel writes, prior to the Industrial Revolution, the locus for an individual's work was the home. Tradespeople, farmers, and others worked at home, and people came to them. The Industrial Revolution saw the locus of work move away from the home to a factory floor so that an individual's identity began to be derived from their work and their autonomy was lost. Even today, with companies permitting working from home, the ownership of that choice and measurement of its benefits rests with the company, not the employee. How much are moments like the ones we're discussing signaling people's desire to regain autonomy over the way they work for themselves? Nancy Rothbard, do you have any thoughts on that?
I think that that's a really fascinating comment. I was a history major, actually, and this hearkening back to the pre-industrial revolution way of thinking is really important. You know, what happened was we used to have a very integrated work and life spheres where we were working in our homes all the time, and then through the Industrial Revolution, there was a real separation of this in space and time, and so we really separated the two and then started to think that was normal. And I think that with technology and kind of and globalization, we're starting to really realize that there is not necessarily the new normal is not separation, but it's actually integration of these different life spheres. And what we're having to figure out is how to separate them, how to manage them in ways that make sense for each of us. And some of us might prefer to separate more, and some of us really might like the integration. And that's going to really matter a lot in terms of how effective we are at working from home and in these other types of situations.
Yes. Well, Stephanie in Oakland. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. So I am a new mom. My baby is 11 months old, and I started working from home at a new job about 3 months ago. And what I really appreciate about it is that it's given me the ability to, A, ease back into the working world, and B, continue my breastfeeding relationship with my infant, which has been really valuable. So I am just appreciative of that flexibility.
Stephanie, thanks for sharing that, because I feel like I've heard a lot of similar stories from new mothers. There's so much more of an emphasis now on women nursing. And so creating an environment that actually facilitates that, working from home is one of them.
Yes,
Jody Brett Kelly.
My first son, I actually you know, at one stage had to go out and buy a new blouse because all sorts of leaking things happen when you're breastfeeding. And that went on for a whole year. So I think that's a great thing that she's doing.
Well, Dan tweets, working from home is the best thing since sliced bread. It's very relaxing and feels like I have more time in my day, but it's obviously not for all. Nancy writes, my ex-husband started working at home when our first child was 4 months old. It was difficult for both of us and caused a lot of friction in our marriage. When I was about to put her down for a nap, he'd emerge saying he had some time and insist on taking her out for a walk. She was not on much of a schedule and did not sleep through the night for more than a year. When he knew he would be free for a while, he would play with the kids but balked at helping around the house. This situation continued for a number of years, and unfortunately, I think it started the long slide to the end of our marriage. Jody Brickelly, how did you make it work? Four kids, 14 years at home.
Well, we do try and have complete different separate parts of the house. And we do only, it's funny actually, we only kind of meet a couple of times in the day and actually speak. But we do end up having these sort of Nadal-like volleys back and forth about the landline out. I'm on the phone. No, I'm on the phone. No, I'm on the phone. So, it is pretty difficult. And I think you've got to delineate all the duties and work and the kids, and also not allow the home admin creep to get into your day.
Well, Herbert writes, working from home is an intertwining of the personal and professional self, and such distinctions are illusory. Well, Jody Brett-Kelly, thanks so much for joining us
this
morning.
Thank you for having me.
Jody Brett-Kelly, an Oakland-based journalist and blogger who's worked from home for 14 years while raising four kids, and Nancy Rothbart, professor and chair of the management department at Wharton School. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mina.
And thank you to our listeners for their stories, their great stories, and their questions and comments. Have a very happy St. Patrick's Day. I'm Mina Kim. This is Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.